Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured, I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a word of steel I dash, and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hall, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Well, the deputy walks on hard nails, and the preacher rides a mount. But nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a futile horn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I've heard newborn babies wailing like a mourning dove, and old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. In a little hilltop village, they gambled for my clothes. I bargained for salvation, she gave me a lethal dose. I offered up my innocence, I got repaid with scorn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Well, I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound across the line. Beauty walks a razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to when God and her were born. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, also at revolution.radio. Remember that Revolution Radio is a listener-supported station, so don't miss your chance to go to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com and make a donation, because they keep two streams of radio going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's a great bunch of people. They deserve your support. And now, without further ado, I'm going to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests: Philip Ferrugio, Frank Cordero, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wortman. And so this Thursday evening we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in northern Minnesota, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Cleveland, Ohio, in Des Moines, Iowa, and wherever you are. My recommended for tonight, you go to memoryholeblog.org. There's a video interview, Erickson Herald, A View from His Side of the Blue Line. Editor's note, this excellent sit-down interview with Officer Erickson Herald of the North Miami Police Department was conducted in spring 2018. Memory Hole blog readers will recall that in 2018, Officer Herald was placed under administrative leave by his state employer when local news media attacked him for his use of social media to comment on complex public events, including the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Parkland, Florida. Again, my recommended memoryholeblog.org, Erickson Harrell, The View from His Side of the Blue Line. The latest issue of Penn Magazine is now available. A conspiracy theory. The CIA is the American media. It's a conspiracy. It just is. How do you know? Are you one of those? I guess I am. My wife doesn't believe me. I don't think there is anyone I see on a daily basis that really believes me. But anyway, we don't talk about it. You don't talk about these things. Some things are just not said. And I would imagine that's according to some plan on some whiteboard in some four-story building in some town in Virginia. Of course, I don't know. You can only think and worry and wonder and surmise. It's like trying to tell what's going on in the game by standing outside the stadium and hearing the crowd noise. How could you even tell what's going on inside? You hear what those who come out of the game tell you is going on, and you hear what those who are covering the game tell you. This is what's going on. Okay. And if they tell you over days, weeks, years, and decades and lifetimes that this is what's going on, why would you ever doubt them? They are good, reasonably intelligent, nice people, right? Not necessarily. We find out much, much later. And so you still, standing outside the stadium, grow impatient, maybe even stomp your feet, throw up your arms, and you try to find out for yourself in the only ways you can. And after a while, you find out a lot. But you would have found out a lot quicker if those inside had told you the truth. Why didn't they tell you the truth? Why? Why? Yes, you want to know what's going on in the game, and finally you have found out. But the question remains, the question you have not found the answer for. Why did they lie to you? Why? The CIA coined the term conspiracy theory in order to cut off at the pass the criticism of the Warren Commission brewing like strong coffee to wake up the people of America. And people like Dan Rather, Walter Cronkite, Tom Brokaw, Wolf Blitzer, Peter Jennings, Anderson Cooper, Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, Mike Wallace, Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, John Stewart, Brian Williams, Lester Holt, Stephen Colbert have been glad to carry the torch of the CIA over the years and decades so that the American people, not geniuses to begin with, are even more stupid than when we started. We are getting nowhere thanks to the esteemed United States profession of journalism. But thanks to people like James Tracy, Jim Fetzer, Paul Craig Roberts, Kevin Barrett, Gordon Duff, Wolfgang Halbig, and Penn Jones Jr., all is not lost. There is hope. There is life. We go on. Penn Magazine is named in honor of Penn Jones Jr., one of the first researchers into the John F. Kennedy murder, an honest newsman who did not lie to us. Penn Magazine, PENNmagazine.us, Mike Polacek, editor, Chuck Gregory, publisher.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio. Philip is a regular weekly columnist on our show. He comes to us from Port Orange, Florida, and he has his own show as well, which has the same name as his column here. It's the Empire Stupid, and I'm going to be pulling that up in just one moment here. Here we go.
America, one big commercial. You know, friends, I love sports since I was a young kid. Now, I can remember vividly sitting in our living room circa 1960 on a Sunday afternoon watching the New York Giants football game with my dad and my brother. It was late in the game, and the Giants called a timeout. Within seconds, the television screen was filled with singer Julie London doing a Marlboro cigarette commercial. As soon as the commercial ended, the live shot on the field showed that the Giants were coming to the line of scrimmage. This all occurred in 1 minute, because timeouts in those days were literally 1 minute. Now, sports fans today can testify that timeouts and other breaks in a game reveal a chain of commercials that go on for 3 to 4, even 5 minutes. Football games in 1960 lasted on average 2.5 hours. My family used to leave our house at 3:45. The game started at 1, and we'd go to the movies on Sunday afternoons. Today's football and baseball games go on for nearly 4 hours. The networks cram in commercials for every break in the action. Plus, they have the play-by-play announcers now doing commercial spots while the games are going on. They're in the huddle, so let's push some ad for some show coming up on our network. I'm a columnist and not an investigative reporter, but I can surmise that regulations have been altered. In the good old days of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, at least there were roadblocks to overuse our airwaves. Whatever the limit on how much airtime slotted each hour for commercials, today is the sky's the limit. As far as guardians of the public good, as our politicians are supposed to be and our government servants, they don't allow cigarette commercials to be shown, but now what we have is excessive pharmaceutical commercials all day and all night. They push so much crap that a human being could ingest, and then they, thank the Lord, have to at least mention the side effects, which are horrendous. Yet it's a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry, this big pharma. Just today, I was on the treadmill at my local gym, and the television there had limited channels to choose from. So I went to CNN just to kill time and was told there would be a story coming on about my right-wing congressman running for governor and some possible racist remarks he might have made. The CNN news host, who's probably a journalism school grad with some modeling experience, said they'd be right back. And I counted on my watch. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4+ minutes of commercials. Really insulting when the host came back on and does an interview with someone else on another story and not the one that was promised. Well, after less than 3 minutes, they go to another commercial break. I mean, it's unreal. Okay, Tuesday was the 17th anniversary of the 9/11 Twin Towers and Building 7 false flag scenario. Remember, I said false flag scenario. What transpired soon after that horrific event was the marriage between the sports media and the Pentagon. Case in point. Before 2009, pro football teams stayed in their locker rooms while the national anthem was played. After the Pentagon threw mega millions at the NFL, we had the weekly honor guards and pomp and circumstance replete with a giant flag draped over the 55-yard playing field. Soldiers wearing camouflage were stationed throughout the stadiums as a final touch to this new commercial. You see, we were, and we are now, at war. Perpetual war, as the late, great Gord Vidal named it. As was the case after World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq 1 and 2, it was in vogue to have ex-military personnel obtain electoral office to further commercialize war. Nowadays, after 9/11, our soldiers have been relabeled as, quote, brave warriors. And we have the license plates and the car signs advertising our branches of the military for all to see. Of course, the last time our nation actually declared war was World War II. But who cares so long as it sells? Thank you.
And now we join In Progress, another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before. But after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplice after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal.
President Cosmo Nutt sat at the big desk preparing his 9/11 speech to the nation, leaning way down to the paper and sticking his tongue out and squinting his eyes to draw dollar signs, tanks, and boobs. He was then escorted out to the balcony by agents from the FBI, CIA, NSA, Mossad, and downtown-friendly banks. The President Nutt had been told earlier by the child left behind that since they have a sign language person working these big speech events, he could only lip sync and wave his arms. It all looks better that way. That's how they do it when they use sign language for speeches. Trust me, she said. And now, if the... Yes, there they go. We see now the long-awaited release of the 1 million boob balloons, each with a candle inside showing us the way. Better to light one boob balloon and send it to the sky than to curse there they go! President Cosmo Nutt waved his arms and, though he was not quite done with his silent speech, he stopped when he saw the boob balloons floating by and snapped a salute. As in the night sky over Washington, D.C., way up in the sky, the fireworks went off, thousands of explosions, and in a minute or two, they drew in the brilliant night air. 9/11, a dollar sign, a tank, and two beautiful boobs. As Kate Smith's voice rocked the city and the world, God bless America! After the President Nutt gave his lip-sync 9/11 speech, he then went into his office, ordered the bombing of little children in Yemen, ordered Dairy Queen root beer floats for everybody in the Al-Qaeda ISIS camp in Syria, and prepared his daily tweet message to the world. Everyone, go fuck yourself, he smiled as he began. I'm the President Nutt, and you are not. We bomb who we want to bomb, and we're getting rich. No, we're already rich. We're getting richer. Go ahead and see what you can do about it. Of course, 9/11 was an inside job with us in Israel. Go ahead. See what you can do about that, too. And yes, Boston, Sandy Hook, and on and on and on. Yada, yada, yada. God bless America. God bless the American people. Go fuck yourselves and have a good night. Stay tuned next week for another episode of The Americans when we will see Rusty the Patsy practicing jumping off the White House garage roof into the arms of Oprah Winfrey and Skippy the construction worker, self-taught on YouTube demolition expert, singing karaoke in the Wellstone Crash Landing Bar on 4th Street, singing, thinking about burning it down, boys, think about burning it down. Nothing's ever going to be the same in this town, thinking about burning it down.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving, and that resisting the American empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather. Since my gal and I aren't together. Keeps raining all the time. Life is bare. Gloom and misery everywhere, stormy weather. Just can't get my poor old self together. I'm weary all the time, so weary all the time. When she went away, the blues walked in and met me. If she stays away, that old rocking chair's gonna get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Can't go on, everything I had is gone, stormy weather, since my gal and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time, can't go on. Everything I had is gone, stormy weather, since my gal and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time, keeps raining all the time. You may notice tonight our songs are focused on rain or shelter. Well, that's because we're thinking about the people in the Carolinas, and it's the hurricane that is hitting there. It's a real big one, and we are, you know, our hearts are, our prayers are with them. Stay tuned. Coming up, Frank Cordero, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wortman, and the news from Moon Rock Lake.
moonrockbooks.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
The latest edition of Penn Magazine is now available. A conspiracy theory. The CIA is the American media. Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. Our next guest for the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each month from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker.
Hey. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Well, are we on the air? Should I start reporting?
Sure, go for it.
Well, the news is that we had that retrial with Ed Bloomer and Greg Borchek from the Duluth Catholic Worker and Brian Hayes from the Brooklyn, New York Catholic Worker crowd.
Oh.
And these are the folks that had a hung jury when they were last tried, and we just completed a two-day trial. I'm just turning off a little more noise.
Okay.
Two-day trial, and a surprise, they were found guilty. Much more seasoned prosecutor this time, but we all got to put on, they all got to put on a good defense, and the problem with this charge for the government is you can't put them in jail for trespass in Iowa right now. So I suspect we'll be given other charges. But for the time being, truth was spoken, not listened to in Des Moines, nothing new. And we just completed a two-day trial. Huh. And then on the home front in the community, as the worm turns, as they say, communal life can be brutal. We're kind of at a place where we've got our next 6 months nailed down for Jess and Ruby and Julie Brown when she comes back from Kurdistan. They're going to be taking 6 months just to heal and recoup from several years of constant war footings, war witness in other countries and difficult battles. Pipeline battles and others, and time in jail. So they're just going to take 6 months off and do their time in that house. All three of those good women, really, that can only help our community to provide that kind of space for them.
Yeah.
And
and we're going to recoup ourselves from our own issues that we've been recently dealing with. I don't know how much I shared on the air, but I just put out a public apology on the internet scene to a fellow community member, Aaron Jorgensen, who over the last few months we have not treated well. Aaron is an adult male, 45, member of a community, 5 years, 6 years, wonderful guy. Has problems with women in love. Gee, what does that mean? That's kind of universal. Yeah. And also issues of sexual boundaries that are not criminal, but mostly stupid, that we've worked on. And he had consenting sex with a 25-year-old person, intern, and it went bad. And human failures happen. This is nothing criminal or anything malicious about that, except two people who had sex shouldn't have had. Spoiler alert to listeners out there. Most consenting adults who have sex with others are disappointed. And it goes south. So, no surprise that some people take a love gone bad badly. Yeah. And think the worst and look for the worst. Huh. And that's okay because lovers hurt. It's just, that's it. I've lived long enough to be on both sides, yeah. Be with friends and neighbors. I mean, almost every kind of combination you can think of. I'm not saying people aren't happy with their lovers. I'm just saying, on the whole, in this country, consenting adults having sex are not satisfied. It has to do with the culture. On the whole, rich people are not satisfied. Has to do with the culture. So you just go down the list. So it's a mix, and it's no surprise that our sex life is bad. All right, that's the spoiler alert. However, what happened was a perfect storm for poor Aaron. A number of people conspired to use this incident, including the person he had sex with, to use this fault and failure and label him a sexual predator. And we've been trying to do what we can, and in the process, label our community and myself particularly a misogynist leader. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Well, when that's out there in the ethers, we've been just trying to deal with it. And finally, Eddie Bloomer and I put out a public statement just saying, you know, we've been silent too long. Aaron Jorgensen is not a sexual predator. These rant and raves by a person who really is hurt, no question about it, and needs help, absolutely. But she's expressing herself in a way that she is using the victimhood of sexual predators, people who have been victims of sexual predators, and using that to discredit a guy. The only thing I could say to our folks out there who are like, what is Frank talking about? These things happen all over, they tell me. I was a priest, so I'm not defending the church at all. It deserves all it's getting right now for all of its stupidity about the priest and sad tragedies and criminal activity and awful, unmentionable. Got it? I hear it, friends. Even in that scene, experts told us that at least 85% of all claims are true against priests. And that's awful.
Yeah.
It is. Now, 15% of claims against priests are not true. And that's awful, too.
It is.
It's awful both sides.
Yeah.
And all I would say about our situation in Des Moines is we have one of those 15% situation where what's being said is just not true.
Wow.
And we're just trying to defend ourselves. But how you do that in this system, and this very, 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 I don't know, poisonous scene in the public arena. It's difficult. But, you know, we're Catholic workers, personalists. We say our piece, we put our heads down, and then we just keep trotting along, you know. Yeah. And hopefully that will happen. And we're going to look for ways in which we can reconcile ourselves and reconcile ourselves, at least for me, to reconcile myself with Aaron Jorgensen, who I think really got a raw deal in this scene.
Hmm.
More than you probably wanted to hear.
Well, no, it's a heck of a thing. Frank, thank you.
It's the culture, and we make ourselves susceptible to it. I would say that people need to know that there are sexual parameters that Catholic workers go by, and as I've seen it over the last 40 years, I would describe the sexual mores and positions of the house range between two extreme points. One, you have the convents, folks who believe the bishops word for word and believe that the only people who can have sex legitimately are married people who are open to procreation, and no one else has sex. Pretty easy world there, you know. Break that world, you're out, all right?
Yeah.
But that's got its problems, big problems. Then we are the libertine side. Dorothy Day pre-conversion, free love side. But it's a free love side with a caveat. Yeah. The caveat is we libertines in the Catholic worker movement who say, we don't care whether you're having, who you're having sex with. It's how you're having sex that matters. And in our house, we've developed a rule that if you're having sex with someone in the house, on any level, you got to be transparent and open about it in the circle. People come in as couples and we take them be accountable to be couples. We take sex seriously. We don't judge who you're having sex with, but we judge how you're having sex.
Huh.
And that's a different scene. And this is where we're caught up in we're that libertine crowd trying to hold everybody accountable on a personal level about their sexual behavior.
Hmm.
We're not policemen, but we get into people's chilies if that stuff has problems. And Aaron Jorgensen, we've been through this stuff with him. And he is being labeled in these terrible media scene, what they call it, social media, as a sexual predator. The guy had to, he got kicked out of our house. He had to leave his job, and he's moved out of town.
Wow.
And it's all not true. So that's the problem.
Wow.
Yeah. And on the other hand, Liv, we don't even know about Liv. I mean, Liv is the person who had sex with Aaron. He or she were only here with us 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Other than that, we don't know anything about, and we don't know anybody who knows him.
Yeah.
So they walk right out. I'm not saying the person hasn't got problems, because I know they do.
Mm.
Just by the way they reacted as they left our community in such a dark and ugly way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you need to heal.
You've heard my confessions. How many Our Fathers? How many Hail Marys?
Really?
All right. I got to go, Chuck. God bless you.
Thank you, Frank.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now. And now. Cue the Rimsky-Korsakov, please. And now for another episode of Professor Rutherford P. Roswell's Conspiracy Corner. We find Professor Rutherford P. Roswell sitting at home, getting ready to begin his weekly podcast from his basement, Imitation Cedar Panel Man Cave. He has his computer and his headset and professional-looking microphone with the fireplace glowing in front of him and his English setter, Apollo, lying on the carpeted floor, feet straight in the air, sound asleep. Professor Roswell checks the time on the computer, sips his drowsy time tea, swivels in his chair and draws the Crown Royal single malt from the glass case, turns back, sprinkles a dash into the tea, and sets the bottle on the floor near his feet. All around on the walls hang dusty photos of Roswell and the important people he has interviewed over the decades. He receives an email notification from the network telling him the show will start soon. He smiles as he types salutations to the many listeners now showing up in the chat room from around the world. Skagway, hello. Roslyn, hi there all. Sleep Mute, Sicily, Mayberry, Virginia City, hello. College Station, Beverly Hills, Barstow, Columbia Heights, Foggy Bottom, Rocky Top, Bear Creek, Sandy Holler, Alsace, Genoa, Venice, Vicksburg. Hello, hello, hello. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now, with your host, Professor Rutherford P. Roswell, it's time again for Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Tea, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Just hold some hot tea in your tired hands close to your chest and slowly fall asleep. Sleep, sleep. Maybe put the hot cup on the desk. Sleep, sleep. Drowsy Time Tea, forget about it and sleep. You. Stop whatever it is that you are doing, because it doesn't really matter. As long as the persistent lie about the JFK, RFK, and MLK murders persists in this country, nothing you do, working out, going to work, eating, sleeping, talking, none of it matters. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. None of it matters. You do not matter.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to all. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get right to it, shall we? It's true. It's all true. The conspiracy theories. I have to sit back, even me, and try to comprehend what that means, even after all these years. Here we go. The September 11 terror incidents in 2001 are said to be the biggest ever deadly attack on U.S. soil. Shamefully, exactly 17 years later, the U.S. President and Pentagon military chiefs are threatening to go to war in Syria to defend the same ilk of terrorists. Shamefully is perhaps not the most fitting word here. Consistently would be more appropriate. Officially, the spectacular plane crashing mayhem 17 years ago in New York City was due to 19 Arab hijackers affiliated with the Al-Qaeda terror network. The account of the world-changing event has been hotly disputed, with many respected authors and organizations claiming that evidence shows U.S. intelligence agencies are implicated in an inside job. The death of some 3,000 American citizens was hence exploited as a pretext for launching a series of U.S. overseas wars whose hidden agenda was for promoting imperialist objectives. In any case, the official story is that Al-Qaeda operatives hijacked four airliners on the morning of September 11, 2001 and flew them into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center of New York, as well as into the Pentagon building near Washington. The fourth plane crashed in a rural area in Pennsylvania, allegedly after passengers challenged the terrorist pilot. The Al-Qaeda terror network, with its ideological links to Saudi-sponsored Wahhabism, it was declared enemy number one by then-President George W. Bush, who proceeded to launch wars on Afghanistan and Iraq, supposedly to avenge the 9/11 atrocity perpetrated against American civilians. The so-called war on terror has since become a much overused blank check for successive U.S. governments and their NATO allies to launch wars anywhere in the world to defeat terrorists. It has been used to justify increasing Western state surveillance powers against its own citizens in the name of counterterrorism. To be sure, the official story on 9/11 and subsequent U.S. and NATO military rampaging around the globe has been challenged by skeptics and critics. One of the key lines of contesting the official narrative is the documented evolution of the Al-Qaeda terror franchise, which grew out of U.S. sponsorship of motley radical Islamist groups in Afghanistan during the 1980s. That covert ploy was to give them the then-occupying Soviet troops their Vietnam. American and British military intelligence, along with lavish Saudi funding, created the Frankenstein monster of Islamic terrorism that mutated and spread across the Middle East and beyond. So the very notion that post 9/11 the American creators of the terrorist monster would serve to protect the civilized world from their own creation was always a deeply suspect proposition. The truth is, the U.S. never stopped colluding with these terror groups since the days of the putative Afghan Vietnam for the Soviet Union. The 9/11 incidents may have been some form of blowback, or plausibly it was American intelligence handlers contriving a plot which would give imperialist planners their much-desired new Pearl Harbor, a blank check to declare war on the planet for the benefit of advancing U.S. strategic interests. Granted, the success of that nefarious covert scheme is questionable, given the unforeseen huge financial and social costs to American society, as well as from general bedlam undermining global security. For observers willing to see, it seems indisputable that there is something of a symbiotic relationship between Islamist terror proxies and the U.S. imperialist state. The official enemy is a boon for justifying oppressive state powers against citizens. It serves as a pump for bloated budget to the military-industrial complex at the heart of the American capitalist economy. And this enemy can also serve as target practice for illegal military intervention in foreign countries. U.S. interventions that would otherwise be seen for what they are, as criminal aggression. Further, the terror proxies continue to serve as cat's paws for U.S. imperialism, as in the earlier formation in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union. Rather than direct large-scale American military involvement, the Al-Qaeda brigades are deployed to do Washington's dirty work. Syria is emerging as the new Afghanistan. Officially, the Pentagon and U.S. corporate news media scoff at these claims of collusion with terrorists. "We're bombing Syria to defeat terrorists," so goes the mantra. Substitute any number of countries for Syria as required. Well, if that's the case, why have senior U.S. military people like Michael Flynn admitted that the former Obama administration deliberately cultivated their terror brigades in Syria? We have hundreds of millions of dollars gone into forming a non-existent moderate rebel army in Syria, only for the American weaponry to end up in the hands of terror groups like Nusra Front. What about credible reports of U.S. military helicopters airlifting Nusra commanders out of harm's way to other safer parts of Syria? Similar reports of airlifting or airdropping weapons have come out of Afghanistan, where the Pentagon is still fighting terrorists, 17 years after 9/11. It has taken a painfully long time over the 8 years of war in Syria to uncover the full and real extent of criminality by the U.S. and its British and French allies, along with the Saudis, Turks, and Israelis. But now we're coming full circle. President Trump and his officials are warning they will launch military strikes on Syria if the Syrian army and its Russian and Iranian allies proceed with the offensive to retake Idlib province. The Northwest province is the last remaining stronghold of anti-government militants. These militants are not the illusory moderate rebels the Western media have long bamboozled the public with. The militants comprise Nusra Front, Ahrar al-Sham, Islamic State, and other self-professed Wahhabi jihadists of the Al-Qaeda franchise. The myriad mercurial names are merely part of the U.S. cynical cover. Trump, the supposed non-interventionist president, has even discarded the earlier ruse of invoking chemical weapons as a pretext for a U.S. military attack on Syria. He and his officials are simply saying that any offensive by the Syrian army to retake all of its territory is an unacceptable escalation that will be met with a U.S. military response. There is no other credible rationale for such military deployment by Washington in Syria. The Western media are, as usual, riding shotgun with the mendacity claiming that the Syrian army offensive will trigger a humanitarian crisis, rather than reporting the salient fact that the offensive is aimed at eradicating the most vile terror groups from that country. Is Syria today, 17 years after 9/11, the real relationship between U.S. authorities and terrorism is on display. The United States of Anarchy.
This has been Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Tea, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Just hold some hot tea in your tired hands, close to your chest, and slowly fall asleep. Sleep. Maybe put the hot cup on the desk. Sleep. Sleep. Drowsy Time Tea. Forget about it. And sleep.
Who's peeking out from under a stairway, calling a name that's lighter than air? Who's bending down to give me a rainbow? Everyone knows it's windy. Who's tripping down the streets of the city, smiling at everybody she sees? Who's reaching out to capture a moment? Everyone knows it's windy. And Wendy has stormy eyes that flash at the sound of lies. And Wendy has wings to fly above the cloud, above the cloud. Who's tripping down the streets of the city, smiling at everybody she sees? Who's reaching out to capture a moment? Everyone knows it's Wendy. Who's tripping down the streets of the city, smiling at everybody she sees? Who's reaching out to capture a moment? Everyone knows it's Wendy. Who's tripping down the streets of the city, smiling at everybody she sees? Who's reaching out to capture a moment? Everyone knows it's Wendy.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exile Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steiner will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
The latest issue of Penn Magazine is now available. A conspiracy theory. The CIA is the American media. Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. Our next guest is Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer is a retired university professor in philosophy. He lives in Madison, Wisconsin. He's a reporter, a radio show host, a blogger. And we're proud and lucky to be able to have Jim Fetzer on each month. And right now, Jim Fetzer from Madison, Wisconsin.
Chuck, my pleasure to be back with you again. James Corbett has produced a completely brilliant one-hour overview of how the stage was set for 9/11, entitled 9/11 War Games, Episode 346. Don't miss it. This is absolutely indispensable. And once you watch 9/11 War Games with James Corbett, then watch 9/11, Who Was Responsible and Why, on BitChute, B-I-T-C-H-U-T-E, which I produced. And between his explanation of how it was set up and my explanation of how it was carried out, you will know 99% of all there is to know about 9/11. Just to give a prefatory remark, they created so many simulations and distractions and fake scenarios going on in relation to 9/11 that the military was incapacitated. This was a deliberate stratagem to make it impossible for there to be a military response, even though between the first strike and the crash in Shanksville, we're talking about over 2 hours when you ought to have had U.S. fighter interceptions of allegedly hijacked aircraft within minutes, all part of a very cleverly contrived approach to generate massive confusion. Corbett does a completely brilliant job on this. I can't commend him highly enough. You must watch it. And then my two-hour 9/11, Who is Responsible and Why, on BitChute. And if you just put in the title without putting in the word BitChute, you won't get there. I lay it all out, and what you'll discover there is that they were continuing the fakery, the two of the planes, Flights 11 North Tower and Flight 77 Pentagon, were not even in the air that day. And that pilots for 9/11 Truth tracked Flight 93 and discovered that it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it allegedly crashed in Shanksville. And that Flight 175 was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, after it had ostensibly hit the South Tower, where I obtained FAA registration records that showed that the planes used for those two flights, and remember, of course, the same plane could be used for multiple flights on different occasions, today from Miami to Chicago, tomorrow New York to LA, were not formally deregistered or taken out of service until 28 September 2005, which raised the obvious questions: how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11? And how can planes that were that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? Indeed, it turns out that half a dozen or more of the alleged Islamic hijackers turned up alive and well the following day and made contact with the UK press, as David Ray Griffin has made his point number one in his magisterial work, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. In addition, let me highly recommend the 9/11 Memorandum series that has been edited by Robert David Steele, which brings together 27 experts with 28 memoranda, because there are two from John Lear. I mean, we're talking about leading experts on 9/11, including David Ray Griffin himself, Peter Dale Scott, Richard Gage, Christopher Bolin. There's a brilliant piece by Greg Felton when we get into the, you know, the motivation behind it, because 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad in order to instill fear into the American people that we were being attacked, in order to justify drawing the United States into endless wars in the Middle East on behalf of Israel. It appears to have originated in the fertile imagination of Bibi Netanyahu in the 1980s, who conducted a conference in Jerusalem on terrorism, how the West can win, and where, with the demise of the Soviet Union in 1990, the neocon think tank Project for a New American Century, which was loaded with dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, was promoting the idea that if only the U.S. would move aggressively into the geopolitically sensitive region of the Middle East and exert diplomatic and military pressure outward, that there'd be the opportunity here, given only one remaining superpower, to create a new American empire that would endure for the next 100 years, hence the title, Project for a New American Century. But that was just camouflage. It was really a project to get U.S. involved in wars in the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that serve as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran. As Wesley Clark would eventually report to us in 2007 at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, Clark had served as Supreme Commander Allied Forces Europe, meaning Commander General of Europe of NATO, and returned to the Pentagon after 9/11, where he encountered a general who explained to him that we had a plan to invade Iraq. Both Clark and the general thought that was bizarre because Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. And Clark asked him to keep him informed when he returned to the Pentagon about a month or so later. He encountered the general and said, "Are we still planning to invade Iraq?" And the general said, "Oh, no, sir, it's much worse now. It's step into my office. I've just received a memorandum from Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld that our plan now is to take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran. And they were both simply dumbfounded. Clark said, "What in the world's going on here?" And the general said, "Oh, I don't know, sir. I guess we're just good at it." And Clark asked, he said, "Is a memorandum classified?" And the general explained, "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir." Then Clark said, "Well, then don't tell me about it, because I may want to talk about it." And in 2007, he did precisely that, laying out the master game plan. Let me observe in passing that Osama bin Laden had nothing to do with it. When he was confronted with reports about the attack, he denied having had anything to do with it. He explained that it was contrary to the tenets of the Quran to murder innocent women and children, and that there appeared to be a government within the government of the United States that wanted to blame this on Muslims. He was, of course, 100% correct. It was the Israeli influence within the government, where even William Jefferson Clinton, you know him as Bill, acknowledged it was a government within the government, that he does not control it. And of course, it's been this deep state that's been seeking to subvert the Trump administration, because it wants to drain the swamp, clean up the mess, the residue from the Bush-Cheney administration. All these Hillary supporters and the people who were following Barack Obama in his efforts to corrupt the United States is completely outrageous. Let me add, by the way, that Osama was our man in Afghanistan. He was instrumental in getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen, which they used to shoot down Soviet helicopters and planes, and drove the Soviet Union out of Afghanistan. He was an official with the CIA, Colonel Tim Osmond. He was visited by a CIA representative at a hospital in Dubai shortly before his death on 15 December 2001. He was buried in an unmarked grave in accord with Muslim tradition. There were local obituaries. Both CNN and Fox News reported his death on 26 December 2001. It was simply politically expedient for Barack Obama to resurrect him and kill him again in a raid on the compound, all of which was completely staged. The residents of the village had never seen Osama. The photograph we were shown of a guy with a clicker was the owner of the compound, decided to be not Osama bin Laden, and of course his body was dumped at sea so it couldn't be subjected to forensic examination, claiming in accordance but actually contrary to Muslim tradition. I regard there as having been three most important developments in the history of 9/11 research. The first was the publication of the new Pearl Harbor by David Ray Griffin, because the Project for a New American Century had worried, they published this in print, that Americans might be slow to grasp the unique historical opportunity and it might slip through their fingers, but for perhaps the occurrence of a catalytic traumatizing event such as the new Pearl Harbor, which they brought us on 9/11. Second, founding of Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December 2005, bringing together experts from all around the world to pool their resources. And now the 9/11 Memorandum series, you can search for it, by Robert David Steele. Memorandum on 9/11, and you'll find it on my blog and on his. And now this brilliant new work by James Corbett. Check it out. Follow it up with my BitChute presentation, and you'll understand 9/11. I want to thank Mike and Chuck for these opportunities to join you once again.
The mind of an American rules the world. The president, Warren Buffett, Tiger Woods, Katie Couric, John Stewart, the Michelin man. No, stupid, it's you. You are king of the world, God, Superman, King Midas, all that. It's you. You are more than just a legend in your own mind. You are the man. And when the CIA, through the CIA propaganda machine called Radio Free Europe or the American Free Press, tells you the Russians are coming or the criminals are coming or terrorists or the Iranians or Iraqis or Afghans on nuclear-powered blue donkeys or big bees, and you believe it? Well, then, Zeke, that's how the world will go. You are powerful, the most powerful Yahoo who has ever lived in the history of living, and you are an idiot, and the world is going to burn. You are not an idiot on purpose, but an idiot nonetheless. The CIA, the persons in the CIA are smart, but they are evil, the actual evil empire, and they control you, the most powerful person in the world. If you were not an idiot, they could not do that. But you are an idiot, and that's a bummer, man. That's a bummer. Our next guest of the show is Thomas Wertmann. Thomas Wertmann is the director of the Ohio MUFON. MUFON is the Mutual UFO Network. So we're going to try to contact in Cleveland, Ohio, Thomas Wertmann, director of the Ohio Mutual UFO Network.
Hello.
Well, hello, Thomas. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great. I get videos and pictures sent to me all the time, and this week was no exception. I got this email saying, hey, check out this video, and it was from a friend of mine that is part of an astronomy group. He says, check this out and see what you think. Well, the video featured a UFO flying over North Carolina lake, and that video, by the way, has attracted so much attention on YouTube, it's gone viral. And there's a lot of speculation that the object of the video may not have been in this world. The video in this case was exceptionally shaky. It was posted by the witness on May 29th and taken over Lake Norman, North Carolina. Now, this video, the Senate viral, has been looked at over 250,000 times. And a lot of the viewers of it are kind of scratching their heads trying to see what, you know, what makes sense. In the description, it says that the witness was at work about 10:30 a.m. in the morning on a rainy day. The raining finally stopped, so he went to pick his boat up from the lake. And when he came around a corner, he saw this thing setting still in the sky, and it wasn't that far away. Naturally, the talk with him and his friends turned, you know, hey, this got to be a UFO. This got to be an alien craft. And many of the comments that were posted on the YouTube site said, well, maybe it could be a hoax because this thing had super shaky camera footage. And also the video gets cut off, almost like they're cutting off at a certain point to kind of keep you from seeing something that happened after that. Well, it's some of the comments consist of something like, next time you film a UFO, try to jump around a little bit more, man. Add a little bit more blur to it if you possibly could. Another comment on it was, hey, I'm videoing a UFO, but I've got lots more important stuff to do later on in the evening. And then also, aliens always reveal themselves to people who shake uncontrollably and have no idea how to operate a zoom lens on a camera. Classic UFO alien motions. Well, other people looked at a lot more constructively on there, and I've done similar types of videos myself. And some said, you know, maybe he filmed a drone or something along those lines. Well, in this case, I hate to disappoint one of my friends on there, but it was a much more natural explanation on there. They happened to contact Goodyear Corporation, and Goodyear happened to be flying some blimps around a NASCAR race just a few miles from where this photograph was or video was taken on there. And Goodyear even came out and backed that story up. They said, you know, we don't want to get out in the way of a good story, but yeah, that was us flying around after a race at NASCAR. Well, when I look at things like this, and this one had an explanation, and people are posting stuff on YouTube all the time, I'm like, wait a minute, there could be a lot of good reports being missed out there just because somebody sees a video and all of a sudden they get locked in this thing as it's got to be fake, it's got to be a hoax. And all of a sudden, in the middle of, as I call it, the forest, we could have this one tree that's out there, which is this great UFO sighting that goes unnoticed, just like the tree in the forest, just because it's getting intermixed with all the rest. So one thing I'd always want to recommend to your witnesses, you know, hey, there are your individuals out there listening to the show, they may come across some great videos out there, and don't laugh at all of them, even though some of them may look a little bit different in this case. As far as states go, I also saw a report that said, you know, California's highest in the country in UFO reports, New York and some other states out there like that. And you think of a lot of times states with the highest populations like Texas. But something maybe people should consider is the states with maybe the highest number of UFO reports aren't the ones which have the highest populations. Maybe it's something a little bit different. They should look at the states and the number of UFO reports coming in and the population of that state compared back to how many reports that they have. If you did that, what's interesting is Vermont, Oregon, Washington State, Maine, New Hampshire, Arizona, New Mexico, Alaska, states along those lines, Montana and Idaho, actually jump up into the top 10 because they've got more UFO reports per 100,000 residents than those of, in this case, California. And that's based on a report that was done by an organization called 24/7 Wall Street, which is a financial news and opinion site. This is the data they came up with. On a different note, I was also seeing that there's a lot of signals being discovered from space, what they call fast radio burst. These are really short, powerful bursts that occur only once, but astronomers have been detecting and tracing these things for years. According to some scientific magazines out there, there's 72 previously recorded signals of unknown origin that have come from space. But now what they've also started doing is turning to artificial intelligence. Now, of artificial intelligence, they've gone back and looked at a lot of information that they've recorded coming in from these regions. And the organization has done a lot of recordings called SETI, which is a search for extraterrestrial intelligence. They've got a project called Breakthrough Listen. And what this project does is it's trained, and I hope I don't mess this up, to monitor, in this case, convolutional neural networks. And it's going through, in this case, 400 terabytes of information of existing radio signals. And a lot of these have come from 3 billion light years away. And some of these were first discovered in 2012. Now, while digging through the signals in 2017, they found 17 signals that initially were missed. Now they've been combing through those signals even more using artificial intelligence that's been trained to look and detect certain types of signals out there. They've come up to now a total of roughly about 300 signals that were previously undetected out there, or undetected and detected. Now, that's a lot of signals out coming from outer space that they can't explain. Now, they said these things may be related back to, in this case, planetary origins, as far as not just a signal coming from a planet, but it could be, in this case, emitted from stars or other astronomical features in space. But myself, I always like to look at the fact that maybe these things are coming from an alien technology. Now, the power of these things was also just incredible. He said the power of these fast radio bursts was more power than coming from our sun itself. Now, that's incredible out there. And over the next few years, we should be getting more information on these because they're improving the artificial intelligence. And also, the space program is developing more telescopes that are going to be launching in the next several years to look deep in space. Another little story I noticed out there, kind of going back to space, is I saw this thing about where, in this case, they're talking about now a secret space program being formed by the government. And to see if it has anything to do with these secret Pentagon files that came out in this case last year. And I had the opportunity of talking to some of those individuals who were involved with those documents on there. And those documents were released, and they were not of necessarily an unclassified nature. He says what they had been done is they'd been vetted and gone through, and the information that was released out there did not contain, like, locations of aircraft. It didn't contain, per se, exact positions on there. Sometimes the call signs were removed, or most of the time they were. In this case, that was unclassified data that was removed, and what they'd done is they'd scrubbed them and taken out that information before it was released. Well, some of the speculation is maybe the secret space program is being prompted by these objects that were reported by the military and released in some of those Pentagon documents on there. Well, I got a chance to talk to the individuals involved with some of these programs, and they said, well, one of the things a secret space program may be doing is not so much maybe looking for alien technologies out there, but more or less safeguarding our own satellites and so forth up there. Because ever since we've sent our first satellites up in space, one of the concerns is how do you keep them safe? And if you think about it, so much of our technology now is based on satellite, internet, and transmissions of that sort. So what they're looking at doing is creating potentially a program that's not going to be involved with, like, the Air Force, but it's going to be a totally separate program that will help monitor our satellites. And that's going to be one of the responsibilities of this secret space program. Now, back when President Reagan was president, he proposed a network of space-based lasers that would protect our satellites at that time. And the idea was if any missiles were going to be launched towards our satellite to knock our satellites out, that these lasers would actually shoot the missiles down. Now, this is a program in this case called Star Wars. Now, since then, the Air Force actually has had a program that they created called Space Command. And they were really tasked with duty to protect, kind of protect us from space since the 1990s. And protect us from space would be going back to not just a alien technology, but from our foreign countries around us on here.
I hate to interrupt, but we are just about out of time. This has been fascinating. I very appreciate you sharing it with us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
what's in it for you?
We talk about decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, we return to The Adventures of Mark, the most dangerous blogger on the planet, Earth. In his parents' basement, covered in Cheetos dust, he writes on his blog, Cheetos and Moondust are both orange. This new piece he's just now completing that will change life as we know it in his neighborhood in South Central Wisconsin. Why did good Germans become silent about the Holocaust while it was happening, and why are good Americans silent about the documentable facts that disprove the official White House conspiracy theory about 9/11? Over the past 17 years since 9/11/01, the title question has plagued the tens of thousands of committed groups of highly intelligent and thorough truth-seeking scientists, physicists, architects, engineers, etc., who have absolute proof that the official Cheney Bush White House story about what happened on 9/11 was a big lie that was so easily perpetrated on a fearful, gullible, and mainstream media-saturated public that was very willing to suspend their critical thinking skills and throw their trust onto authority figures that would tell them what they were supposed to believe, even if it was contrary to what they actually saw with their own eyes. Unfortunately, those pseudo-authority figures that have the power to dominate the media also have a long history of being serial liars, and they have hidden ulterior motives and a willing mainstream media machine on which to perpetuate the lies. Millions of clear-headed people all over the world have gradually begun to disbelieve the big lies about 9/11, and have started to pay attention to the evidence that disproves the lies, even though they are big ones.
The truth has a way of getting out, albeit usually too slowly. And thus these truth seekers have seen through the propaganda that launched and perpetuated the lies. These clear-headed folks with the unassailably truthful facts on their side, all easily provable in a court of law, are naturally wondering what is going on with the perpetuation of the White House 9/11 myths. And why has the truth been forbidden to be spoken of in average newspapers and media outlets like the ones in my hometown? Billions have seen the suffering, despair, and slaughter of innocent Muslim women, children, and old men that have been driven from their homes by U.S. soldiers and their lethal high-tech weaponry. Many observers know the names of the military, economic, corporate, and political entities that were the beneficiaries from the post 9/11 wars. Those wars lavishly enriched them all, but it was at the expense of the doomed, deceived, and psychologically deadened with boots on the ground that did the dirty work for the perpetrators, all of whom were safely back in America orchestrating the chaos. Many of us know the names of the war profiteering oil cartels, weapons manufacturers, gun runners, the rent-a-mercenary corporations, and all the other multinational and American corporations that enjoyed huge stock market gains back then, not just from the wars, but also from the rumors of war. Again, at the expense of the soldiers and the deceived and pseudo-patriotic citizens watching the exciting carnage on TV. Stay tuned next week for another episode of Mark, the Most Dangerous Blogger on the Planet, when we will hear Mark say, "What was that?" Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The attacks of 9/11 happened what should seem like a long time ago, but it does not. It seems like yesterday. There are people still locked away in Guantanamo. War is still being fought. People being killed. Lies being told. New lies. Old lies perpetuated, placed on monuments. All connecting in a straight line through the hearts of us. Right to that day, that morning. September 11, 2001 happened everywhere, even in Moonrock Lake, and now it can be told. At least something of how it affected the lives of the people there, what went on, the dirty details, even though it seems not so long ago. The truth. The story of at least a few of the people who lived here during that time. Enough time for someone to be born and grow to high school age. Enough time for those in high school at the time to have children of their own who don't have any reason to question, to ask questions. And so we could be quiet and let them be comfortable in not knowing. We could do that. Some of us still hear the news reports of those days. Quotes we read somewhere playing in our minds like there's a radio somewhere tuned to 12 years ago. You had to be there, as the saying goes, to understand what it was like. Horrendous. Kate Smith on the radio, George Bush on the TV. Your local newspaper is now the Soviet Star Tribune. There's a radio on somewhere. I hear it. Can't you hear that? We look. We have to look. You always look. Trust yourself. You know more than you think you do. Dr. Benjamin Spock. Last couple times we heard about Cooper Light, a young boy who had learned some things from his father and did not believe all he was being told on the radio, the TV, and in the newspapers. He was angry at the old people in the nursing home for having American flags on their doors as he delivered their morning papers. And he got called into the principal's office for the message on his T-shirt and had to talk to the same guys in suits who sit outside his home all day long, waiting for his dad to come home, who wasn't coming home. Well, and then Pete Penny. Burning the tax form, packing his mailbag, starting his route. The next morning, Pete Penny stood in front of his bathroom mirror, straightening his blue tie. He licked three fingers and pasted back a gray strand, flicked his wet ponytail over his collar, dripping suds on the clean white shirt. His deep-set eyes and large nose accused him in the mirror. Downstairs, Pete put up a forearm to keep Winston from jumping all over his clean clothes. "Sit down, boy. There, hey." Pete grabbed the dog by the collar, marched him to the back porch. He shut the door, then turned to pull the refrigerator open and grab a tomato, which he set on the counter, cut off a slice, and bit it while staring out the window. In an instant, he cursed and dropped the rest into the sink when a glob of seeds and juice stained the front of his shirt. Penny hurried to the bathroom, wet the spot, rubbed it with a hand towel, mopped his forehead with the back of his hand, and picked up the green three-ring notebook from the sink ledge, holding it between his palms. Pete had found the book in the box of Mike's belongings sent home by the military. He read another of the poems, written in pencil on lined notebook paper. Pete walked out the front door, down the three steps, darting looks at his shirt, in a hurry to get to his son's funeral. He began to sweat. The long sleeves looked formal, he figured. He'd loaned his church jacket to Danny McGee for prom and hadn't been returned yet. The black pants he had, and the shoes. The blue tie had been his boy's church one. Pete passed Jane Rose's house and looked. Jane stood in the picture window with both hands on hips, wearing those red shorts and the yellow tank top with the intentional tear in the shoulder. She smiled and nodded. Pete thought he noticed pom-poms behind her back. He looked again, but she was gone. The Legion had hosted a wake for Mike Penny the night before. Pete's brothers and sisters and their families, Pete's ex-wife and her family, rented the party room for after the rosary at the funeral home. The Legion provided a free keg since Mike was killed in combat. A Moonrock-led tradition revived from the Vietnam era for the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. Pete stopped at the corner in front of Mrs. Cobb's. He dug into his pants for the pack of Marlboros. One left. He remembered the two Tylenol on the sink edge back home. He lit the smoke, stood at the corner, a block from the church front steps, watching the mortician setting out the no parking signs in the street, like duck decoys. He wiped sweat from his forehead with the back of his hand. The rest of the family had met at Wurlitzer's to ride in the limousine. Pete had said he could walk from his place. I'm used to walking, I guess. Pete jumped when he felt a sharp point in his back. He turned and saw Mina Cobb retrieving her finger. She held out her arms. He bent down so she could hug him. He delivered my papers for me. You bring my mail. You take good care of me. She wore a new navy blue tiger's cap, a maroon and yellow Moonrock Lake Sky Pilots t-shirt, white shorts to her knees, new high-top Nikes. The announcer on the radio began the pregame show and the starting lineups. Mina turned toward her porch. Pete checked himself again, brushing at the wrinkles in the shirt and pants. Should have put the stuff on a hanger last night, he thought. Took one step back toward the house and saw Tony DiParno scurrying up. Penny waited. Hey, Tony, Pete said while whisking ashes from his sleeve. Are we late? Asked Tony. Pete eyed the church, saw the shiny black mourner's car edging toward the front door. Nah, it's fine. They stepped into the crosswalk together, then headed Kitty Corner to St. Barbara's Catholic Church. As they reached the steps, Tony draped one arm around Pete's shoulders. They waited on the curb for the family to crawl out of the limo. With Tony still wrapped around his neck like an old muskrat stole, Pete shuffled up to Susan and hugged her around the waist. Hey, honey, he said, kissing her on top of the head. Tony let his arm drop to shake Susan's husband's hand. Carolyn walked quickly around the limo when she saw her father. She squeezed Pete, burying her face in his chest, her tears mixing with a tomato stain on Pete's shirt. Aw, kitten, hummed Pete. Pete held him there for one last moment as a family. The dad, the mom, and the princess ballerina with the Halloween sheriff being pulled feet first from the hearse. Pete nodded to Susan's husband, counted several of Mike's friends that he didn't know. A white van with government plates pulled up and parked diagonally across the street. Pete watched a sprite tan man with a short haircut descend the driver's side and place a narrow hat with two hands like he was crowning himself prom king. A younger man appeared out of the front passenger side. Another two stepped from the side to the back seat. The soldiers in dress uniforms and shine black shoes stood shoulder to shoulder and walked towards Pete, Susan, and Carolyn. The church bells banged. The Susan rejoined Robert and his two children. Carolyn wrapped her arm tight around Pete's waist. He laid his arm across her shoulders. Three young soldiers and three of Mike's high school classmates grabbed hold of the casket and positioned themselves for the ascension of the steps. The young pallbearers clenched their fists and teeth, hoisting the box to waist level, eyeing the climb, counting the steps, staring an opening into the crowd. The family fell in behind, following Mike's dead body, headed backwards into the church, down the center aisle. The congregation stood and turned inward, as at a wedding. The priest met the casket at the foot of the altar. Two boys stood on either side of him. The priest took the dispenser from the server on his right, then sidled around the casket, billowing incense like a Native American holy man to the four directions. Returning to his spot between the servers, the cleric raised his hands, closed his eyes, and pressed downward, an isometric exercise, bidding the people to sit. Pete wiped his forehead with his sleeve. He let loose of Carolyn's hand for a moment to run his open palm up and down his pants leg. Someone coughed. A baby cried in crescendo. 100 memorial cards flapped. A young boy grimaced at the mere few stained glass windows propped open for air. This will never be over. Father Gregory nodded. Two ushers propped open the back wooden swinging doors with metal folding chairs and plopped into them. They would need a quick getaway anyway in order to help stop traffic on the highway for the trip to the cemetery. Father turned to the altar to begin. The boys, who had begun to squeak when they walked from sweat buildup between their thighs, disappeared out the side door to deposit implements in the sanctuary, giggle quickly, then return solemnly to their post at the lower rung of levels around the altar. Each boy wore a black surplice covered in a white alb and underneath a full suit and tie, the required funeral dress for St. Barbara's altar boys, even dead ones, Pete thought. One of Mike's friends placed Mike's ball glove on the casket. Others tossed red, yellow, and white roses from their seats. Kids always surprise you with their genius, thought Pete. He remembered Mike riding to City Rec ball games with that glove on his handlebars. He recalled rubbing oil into the pocket when it was new, wrapping the glove in postal rubber bands for a week. Years later, he used super glue to repair it. Pete straightened his arm on the pew behind Carolyn. Then they stood, knelt, then sat again, and repeated the routine. Pete completed it without thinking. He didn't hear the priest or the sounds of the church. He walked with his son, tracing the life of a child now become legend, myth, a god of the baseball field, classroom, and battlefield by virtue of an early death. Pete delivered Mike to the bus station in Columbus for the trip to basic training at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Later, they'd been able to share the joy of accomplishment at the graduation ceremony, though Pete rode back alone. A map of Afghanistan hung in Pete's kitchen. He'd taken a subscription to the Washington Post, even though the papers came in bunches, often a week late. He got hooked up to cable when Mike's unit was called up. For 3 weeks, Pete heard nothing. Then something along the parent grapevine. Later, a paragraph in the news. There may have been American casualties involving local boards. The story made its way to CNN. The 3rd Infantry lost 3 men during an all-night firefight. Next came the official notification from the Army, the cell phone call from Susan, followed by inquiries from brothers, sisters, grandparents, and Father Gregory, who said he would take care of everything. When they viewed the body, Mike had a mustache. For a moment, Pete was relieved. His son didn't have a mustache. They had the wrong boy. Of course, this can't be right. Mike Penny does not have a mustache. He doesn't even shave. Just now learned to tie his own shoes. Make sure he wears his cap when he goes outside. This isn't my son. Thank God. And then Pete fell 10 feet from the open casket and wept. His knees cracked the hard floor with a popping sound that echoed and that he did not hear or feel. He crawled to the casket, pulled himself up by the rim of the open container. Carolyn tugged at his underarm to say it was time to stand now. Pete looked around him, saw a forest of people. He stood. Then it was time to sit. Father Gregory strode into the lectern. The air conditioning fund will be the second collection on Sunday, he said, while wiping his glasses with the sleeve of his vestments. He thanked the Catholic daughters for helping with the arrangements and the coming meal in the basement. It should be cooler down there, he smiled, while putting his papers in order. He then recounted Mike's life, the state baseball runner-up trophy, the duck hunting with his father he so loved. The priest smiled wanly down at Pete, who adjusted his bottom on the wood pew. We're proud of this son of ours who answered the call and did his duty, who would not allow the forces of terrorism to have the last word. Like a magician, the priest produced a fresh handkerchief from the sleeve of his robes, flapped it to unfold it, then removed his glasses, wiped his face, then the glasses, and lifted his robes with the florist to place the cloth in his back pants pocket. He then took a short drink from his personalized water glass. We're pleased today to have with us representatives of the United States Army. Mike wanted that. That's the kind of man he was, said Father Gregory. A spasm shot along Pete's jaw, and it ached to try to open his mouth. And these men will tell you that those in the fighting especially do not like the fighting. They're true men of peace. Pete stared a hole through the young priest's high forehead. But they will do it to preserve freedom and to allow us here in Moonrock Lake, so far from the battlefields, to enjoy the freedom to worship, taste the sweet lemonade, and compete in the ball game scheduled for later today. With both hands, Pete grabbed the pew in front of him. He pulled up and walked down the row on the kneeler, his long arms stroking his pendulums. His head down, back slightly hunched, making him look like an emaciated Bigfoot in a suit and with a ponytail, stalking toward the middle aisle. As he reached the end, Pete stepped down and turned sideways to squeeze past the casket and lean up the worn red carpet out of church. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We are so glad that you joined us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week after that. And I'd like to thank you, Mike, and good night.
Yeah, and thanks to you, Chuck, for all the work you did with the interviews and everything else to make the show possible. And thanks to our guests, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wortman, Philip Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you will find information about all of our regular guests and also the archives, newdream.us. Also, Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. If you would like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawkstrom. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell, and good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
In my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm going to Carolina in my mind. There ain't no doubt in no one's mind that love's the finest thing around. Whisper something soft and kind. And hey, babe, the sky's on fire. I'm dying, ain't I? Oh, I'm going to Carolina in my mind. In my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm going to Carolina in my mind. Good night, everyone.
See it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat asses, eating and drink themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out.
Not me.
Get it done.
Revolution Radio. Where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution.
opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Rebel.